Welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show, bringing the tales and stories of the ancient Celts to your fireside. Episode 34, A Debt is Repaid.
Welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show. I'm Ruth.
And I'm Gary. If you'd like to send us a message or some feedback, drop us a line at garyandruth@celticmythpodshow.com or have a look at all the things we've got available for you on our website at celticmythpodshow.com.
And if you've got an iPhone, iPad or Android phone, you can get hold of our app, which has all the shows and occasionally some extra stories and artwork for you to enjoy. You'll find the links on the front page of our website at celticmythpodshow.com.
So, have we got any news and views?
And yes, we have some potentially very exciting news.
Really? What's that?
The story starts at Aberystwyth University 4 years ago, where a research project was set up by Professor John Koch with an interdisciplinary team of scholars, including Professor Barry Cunliffe, well-known Celtic authority.
Ah, now I'm interested. What are they studying, and why do they need folks from different disciplines?
Well, the theory they're attempting to prove, or disprove, is that the Celts originated from the West, that is, from the Atlantic and not from Central Europe, as is normally thought.
Strange. Okay, now that is a major change in historical thinking, but funnily, does match up with the mythological references we got from the Celts themselves.
It certainly does, doesn't it? But there's more. Much of this revolves around the translation of a language known as Tartesian, which is now thought to be one of the earliest Celtic languages and dates back to about 8,000 BCE.
Good grief.
They need all the different disciplines to tie together evidence from linguistics, archaeology, as well as specialists in the geographical areas along the West.
So what you're saying is that we could be looking at a culture that evolved in the West, migrated throughout Europe, and is at least 8,000 years old?
Yes, making the Celts one of the world's oldest leading civilizations. But there's even more.
Really?
An archaeologist from Ontario has found inscriptions in Newfoundland that he believes are Tartesian, and an unnamed university in Wales are agreeing with him. The inscriptions are also being studied by Trinity College in Ireland.
So this is getting the whole Celtic world hot under the collar then?
Yes.
The Celts may well have visited and traded with the indigenous peoples across the Atlantic. Now that would certainly match with the Western origins theory. I'd love to know more.
Me too. I mean, we've had our suspicions before, haven't we?
Yeah.
As soon as we find out any more details about this fascinating story, folks, we'll keep you posted.
Yeah. I reckon, as fascinating as this is, that it's time for the story.
Sure. In our last episode, Puig started to learn many strange new methods of war and had gone into battle with the nobles of Aran's court. They feasted until the early hours, and once more in the bedchamber, Puig had turned his back on the great queen. Now he must prepare for the fated battle with Halfdan, the summer king.
It has long been said by some of the elder druids that the past, the present and the future all exist together, that time is not the straight line that men seem to think it is. Some also say that a man not only has many lives moving from birth to death and back to birth again, but that they all exist side by side in uncountable parallel worlds. Worlds in which all changes are possible, and the decisions a man makes shift him unseen from one world to another. Some of the longbeards also say, often with a wry smile, that all existences are an illusion, and that we create our own realities. All these things went through Puig's mind, as he was sitting heavily in his favourite chair in his chambers, cuddled in furs and swirling the dregs of the mead around in his goblet once more. He tried and failed to understand what it all meant. It seemed a lifetime ago that he had been the young, carefree and headstrong warrior who had been the much-loved Prince of Dovid. Now he had seen so many strange things in the months that he had dwelt within Aran's realm that his mind was reeling from trying to understand them all. He had seen men die repeatedly and come to his feasting hall before setting out once more for the Cauldron of Rebirth. He had seen the Shining Ones choose to fade and die and be reborn as another type of Fae in the blink of an eye. Aran's realm was home to all who had once been alive, and not just men and the beasts of the field, but also to strange worlds and disturbing realms that had died and whose like would perhaps never be seen again. Shaking himself from his reverie, he realized he was well and truly drunk. He attempted to stand, sadly producing nothing remotely close to resembling a standing man, and he waved impatiently at his stewards. They rushed forward, helping him stumble to his bed, and he was asleep long before they had finished covering him in the furs. He awoke with his head pounding, his eyes pierced by rays of sunlight that streamed in from a much higher position than normal. His retinue was waiting for him as he stumbled through his morning routine and gently walked through the halls to break his fast. Today there would be no daily battle practice, no feasting, no revelry, no nighttime lost love. Many months had passed since he had first taken the field with his knights and began practicing with those strange weapons of war. He had learned about many types of sword, about axes, maces, pole arms, the many ways of fighting from horseback that the new tribes seemed to favour, for no one could guess how Havgan would choose to fight. As a warrior born, and also gifted with the strength and speed of Aran, he had excelled at all the combat skills. Over the months, he and his knights had fought hard at their practice, and played just as hard before the evening's entertainments. They'd wrestled, had contests of strength, raced with their horses, and spent many hours laughing with each other. He'd felt their friendship and the love they had for Aran wrap about him like a warm cloak, and he'd been truly happy and relaxed in their company. Today would be no different, he knew, but their bonds would be tested as the host rode to war. Today they'd set out for the meeting at the ford, and he, Pwych, child of the Welsh hills and valleys, would face a mighty king of the other world in mortal combat. If he survived the battle with Havgan today, then it will be time for him to go back to Dovid. He knew that he would miss these true companions, and on this sharp, bright morn, the coming battle with the Summer White began to weigh heavily on his mind. All came from near and far to wish him good fortune in his coming battle, and they brought messages of blessing and gifts of support from the furthest corners of his kingdom. The army of the Grey Lord assembled and slowly mingled on the plain before Caer Aran. Their numberless companies slowly formed up into groups behind their clan chiefs, and one of Aran's true companions stood by each chieftain, ready to pass the word amongst that mighty host. Pwych watched these mighty men and strange beast-like warriors from unknown lands and all the she hosts, shining knights and monstrous warriors, waiting silently for his word. The only sounds, the background noise of tack and harness as the horses shifted beneath their noble riders. In muted shock, Pwych gave the signal to advance. The marching of the men and the horses made the ground tremble with a sound like distant thunder as the army of the underworld set off to war. Long hours they rode through the white forests and the mists until the sound of a mighty host could be heard from somewhere deep in the shadows before them. As they rode slowly on, the shadows and the mists thinned, revealing clouds of ochre dust had swirled around the army of Havgan the Summerwhite that approached eagerly on the far side of a wide, white-watered rushing river. The noise of horses being checked, the deep-throated bellows of warriors as they reined in on the opposite side of the ford brought the reality of the coming battles to the front of each man's mind. Their outlines, huge and menacing, could be made out in the clouds of sand and dust that flew about them as they rode to and fro, the rushing sounds of the water only just audible over the noise of their gear of war, and the harsh, deep-throated cries that they shouted at the now visible ranks of Aram's men. Gwych called his forces to a halt, 100 paces from the water's edge, and watched as the dust opposite them started to settle. One tall man stood ahead above the rest, his golden armour shining in the sunlight so brightly it was painful to look at. His sun-kissed fair hair curled about his shoulders, and never had Pwych seen a man so handsome, and yet with eyes as intense as the coals at the heart of a blacksmith's forge. The great king, Havgan, was ordering his troops into place on each side of him along the sandy shore, and Pwych realised he had to do the same. He turned to his proud companions and signalled them to their companies, all except Rhys, who rode at his side. This was to be a single combat between the two kings. That much Pwych knew, but should either side see their king start to fail, how much could either rely on the bonds of their men to hold true to their promises to stay out of the battle? If he should fail, what of his true companions and their nightmarish companies? Here he had to place his trust in his closest friends, his proud companions, to hold back the forces of the Grey Lord and keep faith in the word of Aram. He smiled thinly to Rhys and nodded briefly. Rhys, holding Aram's banner high in the air and sitting high in the saddle, pushed his horse forward to a point where both sides could hear his deep and strident voice.
Lords, chieftains, nobles and warriors all, listen well. This battle is between our two mighty kings, and between our mighty kings only. Each king claims the lands and the territories of the other, and let no man come between them as this matter is settled.
A broad-chested warrior, clad in simple armour and strips of sun-baked leather, strode forward across the sands on the other side of the river and stood by the stones of the ford. He called out exactly the same words that Rhys had used. And both he and Rhys returned back to their places in the ranks of their own armies. Pwych nudged his horse across the crisp green towards the rushing waters, leaving the ranks of Aram's companies behind him. He stood high in the saddle, and his eyes took in the vast dusty ranks of armoured warriors that stood eager for battle on the other side of the ford. He could make out the bright shining golden armour of Havgan, whose face seemed to shine like a sun amongst the darkness of the men around him, who was riding slowly to the other side of the ford. He settled back into his saddle, tucking his spear under his arm and bracing it against his body. Havgan's armour shone brightly into his eyes, and he allowed Aram's long silver hair to shield his face as his whole world focused on just one target point on the Summerwhite. Puffs of sand suddenly kicked up into the air as Havgan spurred his horse into the water, and the man who wore the shape of a round kicked Storm into sudden life. Storm's mighty hooves were striking the water with the sound of hammer blows, raising spray high into the air. Both men, the dark and the light, closed on each other, the water and the stones underneath them flying high around them. The man wearing the shape of a round was watching each movement of the Summerwhite's body as he charged, his trained eye immediately telling him from the way that Havgan's body weight shifted that although he held his spear in the right hand, he was indeed left-handed. They were approaching to each other's right, so what trickery was this man planning? When they were within 2 horse lengths of each other, the man in Aram's place urged Storm with his knees and crossed over to Havgan's left side, switching the spear to his own left hand as he rode. His mind immediately focused again upon the centre of Havgan's body. He could vaguely see Havgan trying to catch up with the speed of the manoeuvre, and in some part of his mind he knew that Havgan would never get into position in time, just at the moment of impact, Havgan swung his shield high in front of him, and the man wearing the shape of a round, expecting a blow from that shield, aimed the point of his spear squarely at the centre of the shield's boss. As they clashed, lightning flew from the impact, and a round spear clove through the shield, through the bright golden armour, and deep into Havgan's body, tearing him bodily from the saddle and casting him back into the water, 2 horse lengths behind his own horse. Quick rain storm in, casting his eyes over the assembled troops and drawing a second spear. No one moved, however, and the silence began to fall from both sides of the river like the onset of twilight. Slowly, Quick moved up to Havgan, whose blood was mingling rapidly with the water all around him. Havgan looked up at the man wearing the shape of a round, and for a second, his steely eyes seemed to pierce right through Puig. A look of surprise crossed his face, as drawing in a racking breath, he said,
"Chieftain, what right have you got to cause my death? I have caused you no injury. I have no claim against you. I can't understand why you would slay me."
He was bleeding copiously now, and Puig felt deeply moved by this man's plight. Indeed, what injury had this noble and beautiful king ever done to the Prince of Dovid? Feelings of guilt, almost of shame, began to creep up on Puig as he considered this noble, glorious king, whose life was flowing out of him, as he considered the families and the tribes who would now have to survive without his leadership, and the suffering that he had caused him with such a mortal blow.
"Since you have bested me, I am sorely wounded. I ask you now, for the love of all the gods, finish me off. Complete the task you have started."
Puig looked down at Havgan for the last time, his arm almost raising of its own accord to quickly put an end to this noble chieftain's life, as he watched the golden light fade slowly from his shining brow. Havgan's last words came back to Puig, "Complete the task you have started." And he realized that he was but a piece in a much larger game. The only option he had was to fulfill the oath he had taken to Araun.
"Noble chieftain, it may be that I will later have cause to regret doing what I have done this day, but I will not kill you. Let any other that will do this thing slay you, but I cannot."
Havgan pulled himself up onto one elbow and called to his men.
"True companions, bear me away from here. My death has truly come. I shall be unable to protect you and your lands."
Slowly, Puig and Storm waited for Havgan's men to carry Havgan back to their camp, and his own men to move forward and meet him in the middle of the ford. Together they all crossed the blood-stained stones and the cleansing water onto the sandy banks on the other side of the river. Puig watched the druids lay Havgan down onto a bier drawn up by the riverside. Mortally wounded as he was, Havgan blessed his people, and then, glancing quickly at Puig, as a bard played his death song, he waited for the druids to perform their duties. Puig watched them approach, 2 men and a woman. The first druid, moving faster than the eye could see, hit Havgan over the back of the head with an Oum-carved club, knocking Havgan senseless. The second, a well-built man, placed a noose over his head and pulled it tight until the druidess signalled that the breathtaking was complete. Lastly, she stepped up with a knife and placed it at the king's throat, swiftly completing the third death that would ensure his honourable passage into the higher realms, having died in all 3 worlds. Quick stood a moment in silent contemplation, and then turned back to his true companions. Rhys, Yolin, and the other proud companions rode up to him, and he said,
"Now is the time, my companions, to take an accounting of all those that should become vassals of mine."
And Rhys said,
"Lord, everyone should be a vassal of yours. There's no king over the whole of Anun but you."
Quick gazed around over the serried ranks of Havgan's troops. All of these warriors, all of the farmers, the households and all of the homesteads in Havgan's lands were now his responsibility. He turned back to his advisors.
Indeed then, gentles all. We will make camp here, and those that come submissively to swear allegiance shall be received as our own men.
And those that resist, my lord, said Eolin.
Those that do not come willingly, then it is right that we force them by the power of the sword.
And so it was, that in families, clans and tribes, the people came forward to lay their weapons at Puich's feet, swearing their allegiance to him. The lawgivers took a reckoning of their names and holdings, and they were dismissed back to their lands with a duty of tithes laid on them. Some voices complained at becoming Arawn's vassals, even more complained at the tithe. There were a few scuffles and bristling of beards, but Puich's companions quickly subdued them with little bloodshed, smoothing ruffled feathers and stroking injured egos. By noon of the following day, both kingdoms were under the authority of the Grey Lord. As night fell, and the green banks of the riverside began to turn to grey, all of Puich's forces began to disperse back to their homes. He and his true companions headed back towards Caer Arawn, and trusted chieftains leading many tribes back to the lands of summer. Puich was full of mixed emotions. It was true that he had repaid his debt to Arawn, but now he had to return to the castle and say his farewells to Arawn's beautiful and mysterious queen. In our next episode, Puich learns about friendship, wisdom, and magic pigs.
Magic pigs? Fascinating. What's all that about then?
Oh, you'll just have to wait and see.
Oh, all right then. Typical. Right. Anyway, have you got a promo for us?
Yes, I do. But first, we'd like to say a massive thank you to Matthew, Julie, and Thomas for their donations to the show.
Yes, thank you all so very much. Every little helps to keep us going. All donations are very, very welcome.
Thank you. It does. And now we've got a promo for you from the New Order of Druids.
I've heard of the New Order of Druids, or Nod as they're known. They do a free online druid course, don't they?
That's right. And they've had some problems with their podcast, or Nodcast as they call it. It's a great name, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But keep an eye out for it. It's well worth following when it comes back.
Okay, let's play the promo then.
Okay.
The New Order of Druids.
Where the ancient wisdom of the druids meets the new world of today. For the age of druids and magic are not our past. They can be our future.
Who are we?
We are a free Celtic online community for those who seek the druid path.
Yes, but who are we?
We are an online druid college called Grove of Dana with free basic grades of bard, ovate, and druid.
More than that, though. We are friends who learn together, share knowledge and wisdom together, and have fun together. So who are we?
We are the New Order of Druids.
And you can find us at www.druidcircle.org. That's one word, Druid Circle. www.druidcircle.org.
Until they're back online again, their website is well worth going through. All of the details are in the show notes. Or you can find them at druidcircle.org.
Sounds good. I think you can also find them on YouTube and, of course, in the show notes.
Oh, a quick reminder.
What's that?
Well, the competition we set in the Imhotep holiday special for the Celtic Twist CD will be coming to a close with the release of the Spring Equinox holiday special. And just to remind you, do you remember what the question was? How many tracks on the Celtic Twist CD The Visit are original Holland and Palmley compositions?
Oh yeah, I remember now.
Of course you do.
And if you need some help with that, go and have a look at their website.
That's the clue. Yeah, that's the clue.
Right, so when should our listeners make sure they get their answers in by?
Let's say the 18th of March this year, 2013, as the final deadline.
Sounds good to me. Okay, so don't forget to listen to the Imhotep Holiday special, where you can hear a track from the album and, of course, the question too. Good luck.
Super.
I think that brings us to the end of the show now, doesn't it?
Yeah, sadly you're right. So in that case,
we wish you many blessings and say,
Ulvaur.
You've been listening to the Celtic Myth Pod Show, available from CelticMythPodShow.com. We hope you've enjoyed the show and will stay tuned for the next episode. You can send us an email or some voice feedback to Gary and Ruth at CelticMythPodShow.com. We'd like to say a special thank you to Coulan's Hounds, who provided us with the theme music for our show. You can find them at www.sfhounds.com. We'd also like to say a massive thank you to Amrus, Kira, Celia, Dave the Bard, The Dolman, Keltoria, Kevin Skinner, Phil Thornton, SJ Tucker, and Spiral Dance. All of these wonderful friends have given us unrestricted access to their music. And more details about each of them can be found in the special Friends of the Show page on our website. You'll find links to all of these wonderful artists in the show notes at shownotes.celticmythpodshow.com.